We want to welcome all of you to this forum, the first forum of this week. This is a forum is one where we invite your discussion. We present some kind of a topic and invite discussion and participation from you. And tonight we're going to do a session on handicaps, yours and ours. And the idea is that all of us have handicaps in some way. And I'm sure if you think about the things that you just find it very difficult to do, you know yourself that you have some handicaps. We have with us tonight three staff members from the village who have a more visible handicap than some others. But and we thought tonight that it might be interesting for you to hear a little bit about their story so that it might help you in your education and in your relationships to other handicapped people, visibly handicapped people, and also that you might be able to get to know them a little bit better and be able to ask them some questions if you would like to. We have Jan Brozen, who works in the store and in registration, John Ice, and Trudy Knudsen, who work in the kitchen. And because there are three people to share their stories, they will each give a little bit about themselves, and then there will be time for you to question each one, that person directly for a little while, and then before we move on to the next person. But first of all, maybe we can just have each person just tell just a little bit about themselves in general. And if you want to just introduce yourself and where you live and where you have been going to school.
Okay. I'm Jan Brozen. I'm from Owatonna, Minnesota. I just graduated from the University of Minnesota Duluth campus with a double major in psychology and communication. And in the fall, I'm going to go to Luther Seminary, where I hope to go into chaplaincy work.
My name is Trudy Kennington. I'm from Sheridan, Oregon. I just graduated 3 weeks ago from Texas Lutheran College, majoring in theater and theology. I do not have a job. I would like to find one and so that I can raise money. I also want to go on into seminary.
I'm John Ice, or sometimes known as Jonathan in the kitchen, to separate me from the other John there. And I seem to be the elderly person in this bunch. I graduated from Carleton College 8 years ago with a sociology anthropology major. And have spent the years since then in various jobs as a VISTA volunteer in Cleveland, Ohio. Part-time with mental patients' rights there, and part-time with daycare, kept on the daycare for another 4 years after that, during which I got my preschool teacher certification at the University of Minnesota. And then for the last almost 3 years, I was working as a receiving clerk in a large music store in Minneapolis, where I live presently, well, and will be returning when I come back, but will be looking for a job also.
A number of people at home.
Yes, that's not
kind of in between
situation.
Jobs. Right. Okay, then we'll start out with Jan, who has had cerebral palsy as her the cause of the handicaps that you're able to see. And perhaps I think we'll wait until everybody finds a seat because you might not be able to hear. So everybody. Okay, Jan.
Like Dorothy said, my handicap is cerebral palsy, and that's a birth defect. I was born when I was 6 months, and I weighed 2.5 pounds, and I wasn't expected to live, but I obviously have. And then when my parents first found out that I had CP, they were told that I should be institutionalized because I'd be mentally retarded. Well, I'm not. And so that's the history of it all. And I guess why I'm sharing this is just that I want to understand. And I'm so glad that you're all here, because the more that we can communicate about each other, the better it is. And so that's why I'm going to say the things that I am. And a lot of my faith is going to come out, because that's how I deal with my handicap. And I believe that it is all intertwined with who I am as a person. I'm the second of 5 children in my family. And my parents always brought me up that I was like any one of the other children. I wasn't favored in any way. I'd have a lot of surgeries, and I demanded a lot of their time and energy, but was never given any preferential treatment beyond there. I went to a normal school all my life, interacted with normal children, normal teens and everything, and was really well accepted by them. The only time I ever had contact with handicapped kids is when I went to Camp Courage every summer. And for 2 weeks of my life, I felt like I was handicapped, and I spent time with people in wheelchairs and on crutches. And I know deep down inside that I never felt real comfortable with that. I didn't know if I was supposed to be like those people. I had crutches, so I was supposed to be like those people. But yet I was normal enough to want to be like a normal person. Well, my family never talked about my handicap. We just never did. But somehow it was always explained to me that my handicap was a gift from God, and that God was good. So I was never supposed to feel bad about my handicap. Whenever I felt negative, it was interpreted as pity. And I was always told that I was so lucky, that look at the other children at camp, that I could be like them. So I stuffed all the negative things and felt real guilty if I ever felt that way. So I went through life appearing to be the most happy person. Everyone around me said that I was so accepting and so happy, and I obviously believed it for a long time. That worked. I just didn't deal with the negative things. I reacted as though it didn't bother me. Oh well. I smiled my way through life as though nothing ever hurt. I've come to now phrase it as sugar-coated. Very sugar-coated, as though I had no fears, no problems. It was just easier that way. That's what people wanted. And that's what I thought my God wanted. How could I be angry with God? How could I not like the situation I had in life if God gave it to me? That's the kind of God I knew at that point. Well, this all went along till about somewhere in college, I realized that I wasn't like everyone else. There were differences. And the more I tried to be like everyone else, in getting a career, I realized that I wasn't. And it just didn't work to pretend like it didn't hurt anymore, like there wasn't problems. And through counseling that I eventually had to go in, because I was getting into a real problem in my life, I realized that I was a real angry person. I was angry at the limitations I had on my life. I was angry about the difficulties in how people perceive me, in the architectural barriers. I didn't think it was fair. I didn't like what I was given. in life? Why couldn't I be like everyone else? Why couldn't it be as easy as it was? And I was told that it was okay to be angry, but I didn't think it was. I didn't think Christians could be angry. And I held out for a long time not to be angry. If I was angry, God was going to cut me off completely. And, well, finally, I got angry. And it took me a long time to reconcile myself to where now I feel a lot of unity with my God. Now my relationship to God is one of confrontative. I confront Him with the hurts that I feel in life, with the architectural barriers. I carry on an inner conversation with God probably every time I go up that hill and down those steps, you know? God, we've got to get through this. When I got off that bus 2 weeks ago in Holden Village, I thought, oh God, why did I come out here? But it's my relationship with God in being able to get rid of that anger. Now it's a real strength. Now I can look at my handicap, and in being able to point out the hurts, the stereotypes, I get a real strength from that. There's a real unity in who I am. In trying to explain it to someone what it's like to live with a handicap, I've been able to really find that Kubler-Ross's stages of death really fit in for me on what it's like to be handicapped. I think I identify a lot that a physical handicap is a sense of loss. There's part of me that will never be like you, and in that way, it's like a death. And Kubler-Ross has 5 stages of death. Sometimes I go through denial, and don't tell me I can't do it, I can do it. And I'm going to do it. And I feel like I'm Wonder Woman because I'm going to do it. And some days, some moments, that's how it is. Some days I go through a lot of bargaining with God. Oh, you know, why does it have to be this way? Let's just do it a different way. That's some days, some moments. Then other days there's a real anger. Why does it have to be this way? Why don't people understand? Why are the steps have to always be there? Then some days there's depression for realizing the things that I'll never be able to experience. And other days there's a real acceptance moments. I used to think that acceptance was a stage that you got to, and once I was there, I'd always be there. But it's not that way. In order for it to be real, it's a lot of different feelings. And I guess I'd ask for any questions or comments. I have my whole life to draw from, and so I can talk. So.
Good. Does anyone have any particular question that you want to,
What are some of the stereotypes you find people operating on when they start getting to know you?
People are real protective, almost real condescending. I find that a lot of people assume that because I'm physically handicapped, I'm also mentally handicapped. And there's a lot of energy and patience has to go in to me proving myself that I am capable. People are scared, and I understand that. It's not, I when I say these things, it's not to put blame or guilt on anyone, because it's only there because people don't understand. But there's a real protectiveness, people think I'm fragile. People think that I don't want to talk about it. That it's, a lot of people think that you shouldn't talk about it. Especially I find this in parents when their little children stare at me. I think children are just beautiful. They're not so inhibited as we adults are. And if they want to ask me a question, I'll play 20 questions with them. They don't care. They want the answers. And the way the parents try to silence their child, you know, it's that kind of thing.
So that's a good thought for parents, to let their children ask questions.
Because the more you silence them, then I think it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And there the distance is already being built.
Okay, that's
Do you have any resentment towards your parents because they didn't let you dislike God at times?
No, I can't dislike them. It's really helped me to realize that my parents were 24 when I was born. That's getting closer to my age all the time. And to realize what a responsibility they had. And also that I was born in 57. And that's at a time that there isn't all the social agencies and support that there is now. And they did the best they knew how. I believe that every strategy they used was done in love. And they had no way of knowing how it would all work within me. And now it's my responsibility to make myself who I am. And yeah, there's hurt back there, but there's no
But you know they
blame.
Did a lot of lack of knowing how else to handle it.
It's like anyone else. You don't understand until you know better, you know.
Jan's is probably the most visible to most people, but John has a handicap too.
Jan has one more question.
Oh, okay.
There are more questions.
Sorry, I was just asking about your statement about Camp Courage and your feelings towards that. Do you see institutions like that therapeutic in any way, or just for people who are both mentally and physically handicapped?
It is a great place. It is a great place. And I thought so when I was littler. But there was always the element that I never felt like I belonged there because I spent, you know, 50 of my 52 weeks interacting with normal children. For the less able-bodied than I, you know, they don't know any, you know, better. They don't have the capabilities that I do, so then it fits into their life better. I stopped going when I was 18, and at that point it was really hard, because by that point in most handicapped people's lives, I found that they were living in nursing homes or still living with their parents. And I didn't belong there. That's not what I was going to do with my life. But I had no healthy role models that were handicapped. And when I looked at my life, well, what was there? You know, there wasn't anything healthy or to look forward to. It was just, you graduate from college, and then the next step I knew was you went to a nursing home. And that's not what I wanted. So maybe it was beneficial to show me that that's not where I'm headed.
Sometimes it takes a negative lesson. Well, I think we should hear from John and see what he's got. There will be time at the end to ask more questions that maybe apply in general to all of handicapped people, and let's go on.
Okay. When my mother was pregnant with me, about 3-4 months into the pregnancy, she had what seemed to be a rather mild case of the flu. It was later on diagnosed to have been toxoplasmosis, which is a very common disease, although almost no one has ever heard of it. And it is pretty much harmless to anyone except to the fetus in a pregnant mother. And it causes, the first thing that usually attacks is the eyes of the child, and quite often does cause brain damage, skull deformations, and other things. It only attacks my eyes, and it caused an inflammation on the retina, which healed before my birth, but in the healing process, there were severe scars on the retina, both eyes, which pretty much wiped out the central vision in both eyes. Such that when I was born, the doctors said that the child was going to be totally blind. Well, I'd be able to see light and dark, but that was going to be it. Well, as time went on, I proved them wrong. But there has never been a medical explanation for why I can see. Miracle. So as time went on, I was able to see, but not as well as others. And in more recent years, eye examinations have shown that my vision with glasses on is 20/200 in both eyes. Oh, another thing about the condition is that I cannot focus as a normal person would by having both eyes come in on the point that the focus is on. I can't work my two eyes together. There's this nystagmus, the rapid eye movement, which works sort of like a radar, but it sends all these broken images to the brain, and somehow the brain synthesizes it and puts it into a coherent image. I don't know how it works. Doctors don't either, but it works. But I don't have the focusing, and thus don't have the primary source of depth perception. So those are the two main things that the disease has done, and it remains there, bottled up in cysts in the retina, and could break open any time, and then I would go blind if not treated right away. Now, my parents, as with Jan's parents, treated me as they would a child with normal capacities. And I am very grateful for that. I was able to lead a very normal life with a few exceptions. Now, there are... My childhood was somewhat different from others. One thing would be that children, as with some adults also, can quite often be intolerant of difference in others. And so there would be teasing about things that I couldn't do, and that hurt. But generally I would just ignore it, which was what my parents suggested, and usually it worked. They'd eventually get tired of trying to tease someone who didn't react. So I can't really claim that the teasing was a real big thing, but it did happen. Need for peer acceptance. Everyone has that, and me included. And one of the big things with American boys is athletic excellence. No matter how hard I would try, I would never reach the abilities of people in my age group as I was growing up. And so this would mean being the last person picked on teams and all those things that are familiar to some of you, I'm sure. And it meant that my playmates, because I was interested in these things, my playmates were often people who were 2-3 years younger than me, because they were about the same developmental stage I was, at least in learning these games. And in school, adjustments had to be made for my inability to see things at a distance. As many of you people are probably aware, the problem is not that there's this big wall, I can't see past a certain point, see 100 yards, and then it's just blank. Some people think that's how it is. But it's just blurry, the whole thing. I assume that that's what it is. I've never seen anything different. So I'd have to get close to the blackboard at school. And so they allow me to put my desk right up there in front, separated from the rest of the kids, which was a bit embarrassing in the first days of school, but people would get used to it. And then I'd usually be able to handle it. And if I wasn't able to see things well enough, usually I'd be able to remember it well enough so that it wasn't any big problem. Almost all of my teachers were sympathetic with my problems and very willing to adapt things to allow me to help to adjust to the situation. Except for one time, my fourth grade teacher was convinced that in addition to not seeing too well, I was also retarded. And it took me a half year to convince her that she was wrong. And in addition to just the kind of feelings that she had about my abilities, she would sometimes make very cutting remarks. And so I was, as I understand, I think I pretty much blocked this out because it was so unpleasant. But my mother tells me that I was coming home every day and just flopping on my bed and crying. I don't remember that. We became friends at the second half of the year, but that first half of the year was really rough. Okay, then there are various developmental lags and exclusions that happen with a person that has limited vision. As I said, there's the sports, which is a big thing for me anyway. But things that people just sort of take for granted sometimes are difficult. An instance of that is my inability to ride a bike, at least in my earlier years. I tried, as many of my peers did, back around 7 or 8 years old, and would go down the hill and flop whenever I had to turn. And I tried later on when I was 13, and still no ability to stay up. The problem, well, I don't have the world's most fabulous balance, but that wasn't the big thing. The big thing was that I wasn't able to see how people turned. The whole idea of when you turn, you lean into it. I didn't learn that until I was freshman in college. No one ever bothered to explain it to me because it was intuitively obvious. And so when I tried to learn riding a bike when I was 20, it happened right away. No problem. So then... Also, another thing that was always a problem was skills that are learned by visual teaching. Such things as various arts and crafts skills. I never really moved much toward them because when they'd have classes, they'd be giving visual demonstrations, and if I were to see it from a point where I could see well enough, I'd be blocking the rest of the class. So it meant that I'd be off far enough away so it didn't do me any good. Let's see. And that can go on to other things, dancing, a whole list of activities, which I can do if people have the patience and are able to make the adaptations, but it often wasn't the case. I better start moving on a little bit faster because it's going slow. One important thing was when I was in college, I found out what my legal status was. Up to that point, I just knew that I didn't see very well, but that was it. In college, I found out that 2200 was legal blindness, which it was a help in some ways and a hindrance in others, because now when I tell people I'm legally blind, they usually think that I'm a whole lot worse off than I am. But there are some advantages, and the main advantages are that there are some aids available. You may have seen the little eyepieces that I use occasionally to zero in on people and activities. or that I was able to get free tuition at school, or all various things which are reserved due to various aspects of the welfare state. It has become my difficulties with vision have become an issue on jobs that I've held. I mentioned the Vista job that I had. About a year after I was on the job, shortly before I was about to leave, my supervisor told me about the consternation that my being there in the training program had caused some of the officials there in assigning me a place to go. They didn't know where to put me. They didn't know what I could do. So they ended up matching me up with a job which they thought was a hot potato, and that's how they solved it. In the daycare, I wasn't able to observe, didn't have the power to observe large groups and be able to tell what was going on, and so that became a limitation there. Although one-to-one, I was able to do just as fine as anyone else, but I couldn't take on a supervisory capacity there. And then the last job I had at the music store, in general, I don't think I had any real problems. I was able to get close enough to the work to be able to read it. But there was one period where there was tension over something that had nothing to do with my eyes. And I don't know whether it was in a fit of anger or whether this was really meant. But my boss said something to the effect of, something to the effect that we're doing you a favor by hiring you here, so don't rock the boat. You know that you don't do such a good job. Well, I happened to feel that I was doing a good job, and that hurt. There are some advantages that come with not seeing well, but I'd say that most of the things are disadvantages. The advantages would be that in some ways the some skills are sharpened. And I think that this is one thing that I seem to find in common with some of my other non-sighted friends, and that is skills in organizing things, because it is so important to us to be able to find things, or we can't just look around and find them. We had to depend on a certain place for them. And so we get very skilled at putting things in order, and that's not just physical things. Minds tend to work that way too. And so I get up in the morning, I know exactly what's going through that day. I don't even have to think about it. I know what's going to happen. And it becomes frustrating when people, such as my roommate, I have all the spices in my kitchen all fixed up in alphabetical order and stuff, so I know right where they are. And they go and use the stuff and put it back randomly into the whole system. I just have a few more things. People's attitudes. I'm glad that there are many people who just have an attitude of acceptance. There are some who act in condescension, and some who, as there's difference and they don't know how to handle it, so they reject or just move away from it because it's uncomfortable. I have various options which are open to me in handling this. And there are options, these options are very well known, I guess. One is to just give up. This world is an awful place and they don't do me any justice, so I'm just going to give up. I'm glad I've rejected that one.
We're glad to.
And next one would be to try to do whatever I want to do, but expect rejection. And sometimes the rejection does happen. It's something that comes. You can't expect rejection without having had some of that happen to you. And then I sometimes fall into that. But what I would really like to get into is something that I learn from a totally blind friend of mine, Mary Sue Dobbin in St. Paul, just a wonderful, wonderful person. And she has no problems with these self-images or, well, she just goes out in, is such a wonderful, friendly, I put all the stuff down here, radiant with Christian love, competent, confident, caring, secure, spirit-filled. That's, and because she is that way, people love her, and it doesn't matter. She's very competent, but it doesn't really matter whether she's competent or incompetent in the ways of the world. A person is accepted for what they are. And that's what I hope to be, and what I would hope that other people would be also. So, anyway, that's it.
Is there any question to John about his particular sight problems or how you...
Oh, I had another thing. That was... and that is that when you have people with handicaps that are not visible, which mine often isn't, there's more of this problem of people thinking that you can do something and then they expect that you can and then getting mad or frustrated when you can't.
Okay, well let's go on and hear about Trudy's story here. And she also has cerebral palsy and has had some interesting experiences. So we'll hear from her.
A day or two after I was born, my father and my mother were called into the doctor's office. There was, I think, a social welfare worker there. And they had with them papers to put me into the state institution. And they advised my mother and my father, she will never be able to walk. She will never be able to talk. She'll be a burden to your family. And the easiest thing for you to do for her and for your family would be to say, we'll put her, and you can come and visit her. We're not saying you can never see her, but we could take better care. I guess that's what they thought. And my mom and my dad said, she is our daughter. She's a member of our family. And we're taking her home. Okay, that was in 56. So that's my history. Which includes that when I was born, I was breech birth. The cord was wrapped around my neck. Mom knew that it was something wrong when the nurses and the doctors totally ignored her right after the birth. Everyone else in the room was working their tails off to revive me. And they did. But not before enough air was blocked off to the motor part of my brain. My mind was not affected, my intelligence was not affected. My seeing was not affected, my motors. And that plays a big bite in the later story.
Much later.
I mean, you didn't feed her.
With that in mind, I'm not going to talk about handicaps, I'm going to talk about volleyball. I really better to play volleyball than I do to be handicapped, because I don't see myself as handicapped. But that's the second part of the story. First part occurs when I am in junior high school. I had been playing for many years. Early in grade school, enough kids had made fun, and I was not counseled by my parents to ignore it. I was counseled to look for someone less fortunate than I was. How should it make me feel? I was at the bottom, and I was supposed to look for someone under me. And when you feel you're at the bottom, and you get the kids laughing at you, what do? Dig deeper down. And that's what I did. I don't think I had any positive thoughts about myself in the social world. I don't think I did before I was 17 or 18. None of the boys paid attention to me. None of the girls liked to have me around. Nobody invited me to go anywhere. Because early enough along, people had teased me. And I didn't ignore it. I got on the defense, and so I carried my dragon feet along, and I did stumble over my words, and I was embarrassed, and I hated it, I didn't want it, I didn't understand why I had it, and the rage built. Until one day when I was practicing volleyball, I was perpetually on the C team. And one day a girl who had gone through grade school with me, and Sheridan is a small town. At the point of the fifth grade, sixth grade, you're funneled into the same school. So the last 6 years of your school life, you know who's there. And everybody knew me. Everybody knew what I was like. And knew I had difficulties. And still, in the 11th grade, one girl, and I don't know what it was, but one day, we were running laps and we were hitting the ball against the wall. And I couldn't do it. Or I didn't have to do as many as she did. And right then and there, she let one too many bad things fly at me. And I was surprised how many cuss words I knew. And the rage was there. And I kind of wanted to say one that will make you understand what I said. I said, starting out with, how the hell do you think I feel? Do you think I want to be this way? Do you think I don't want to walk right? Do you think I don't want to talk right? Do you think I don't want to be able to play volleyball? Do you think I want to be like this? I didn't know what happened afterwards. That's not important. I think looking back at it is that I had let the rage build up. And that's the beginning, I think, of where I said, I'm no longer going to make myself crippled. I don't have to be handicapped. I don't have to trip over my feet and be ashamed. I don't have to wait for someone, I don't have to get embarrassed when someone said, can you repeat that again? I didn't quite catch it. I will skip to 2 weeks ago, playing volleyball. I was going to watch, and they said, come and play. So I did, and I felt the same feelings of inadequacy build up when I was playing volleyball. And I was saying, I'm sorry, excuse me, I didn't mean to let it slip. I was trying to make apology for being the way I am. And I said, hey, wait a second. So the next time they invited me to play volleyball, I said, I'll watch. Because I enjoy it a lot more watching. And don't get me wrong, I don't watch live. No, it's not up. I'm going to throw in something else that will help make my picture clear. I was going into the festival, and I was there at the exact moment that the school bus with grade school kids pulled up one stop. One had a girl hanging out the wall, out the window. She said, hey, look! There is the weirdo. And for 1 second, I caught myself, and I felt my breath go out of me, and I felt the old feelings that I am different, I am handicapped well up. Mentally drained out and said, I'm not weird. I like me. And I have gotten done stand.
Get excited.
I am not handicapped. I will repeat and you will understand. I am not handicap. Yes, I do have cerebral palsy. Yes, my muscles do not work as well as you do. That's what I say when kids ask me, why do you walk funny? I say, do you know what a muscle is? If they do, I go on to explain. If you don't, I say what a muscle is. And then I say, my muscles are not as tight as yours are. They don't work right. But I get the way I'm going, and people tend to understand me. And so if it doesn't bother me, so I hope it doesn't bother you. It's not a handicap. I'm not handicapped. I look handicapped, yeah. First impressions are always deceiving. I do have cerebral palsy. I look like a handicap, but I'm not. My feet drop, and I trip over them. And I fall down, and sometimes when I fall down, I look off so silly. But I can't get right back up. My speech is slurred. And I'm glad I don't have to listen to it. That is honest. And when I get excited, I shouldn't really talk because then I really, and nobody understands me. Those things are first impressions. And those things are what I fight against. And then if you get to know me and you don't like me, you can't change me. Because I like myself. I was once asked, a guy asked me that, or told me that if we would pray together, this guy and my, you know, I've never seen him before. He came in and said, if we prayed together, God would heal your feet and cure your speech. For a split second, I said, I want it. Yeah. And then I said, nope. God and I have walked and talked this far together. We'll get the rest of the way together. And I think my speech and my feet were cured. Now that I think, they are not burdens. They're there. I work around them. Handicaps would someone please define a handicap?
I think that's a good note that we can think about whether we have handicaps.
I still have 7 minutes. I went to tell you about my friend who's in a wheelchair. And two years ago, she graduated with her teacher's certificate. And we were doing aid work at the same time. She was going through her student-teacher program, and I was just killing the year before I went to college. And one day I went in and asked her teacher why she thought Denise should not be a teacher. You know what she had the gall to say? Because if Denise couldn't go to the bathroom, all day, she should not be allowed to teach. I speedily said, oh, went out of the room and burst out laughing. That was the most stupidest answer. Denise could control that lady's classroom better than she could. Denise chose not to teach because she knew it would tire her. but she fought to prove to that college student that she could get the t-shirt certificate. 2 years ago, a friend of mine had gotten married the previous summer. He was working in skiing so that his wife could finish college, and then they were going up to Trinity in Columbus, Ohio, where he was going to swim. And Brad was out helping moving pipe one day. And the pipes began to sway. And he was guiding them with his finger, and the driver did not see that they were going straight into electrical wire. Brad now has false limbs below each of his joints. That happened 3 years ago. Okay. That happened before Easter. The next year I went to a conference in Washington, D.C. And I got out, looked in the lobby window, and Rod was there. Rod was walking, he has arms. The only thing people could see wrong was that he had mechanical hands. And we were there for 5 weeks. No, 5 days. Alright. The only difficulty Rod ever had was the night we were in the Irish pub. We were relaxing. Isha was holding Irish coffee. Hot. The rubber joint in the hand melted. On this last day, we were sitting having lunch, and Rod was talking, and I was talking, and it came out that Rod had his false bandages a year, and they didn't know he had false teeth. And they did not know he was born normal. What's normal? They were amazed that here Rod was a year later, and he was Rod. Mechanical Rod from here, 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 here. But he was Rod. And I had a very hard time wanting to come and talk about myself because I'm not handicapped. Rod's not handicapped. Denise is not handicapped. We have limits, yeah. But their beauty comes in the courage given by God. Good courage. Every day to work beyond their limits and to be able to say, yeah, I can't do that, but who cares? I do a lot better in other places. Questions?
Does anyone have any questions for Kirby or for
or just comments.
I'd like to add myself to this forum. On Father's Day, I stopped by to see my daughter Kathy. She's this traveling 16-year-old, and we hiked up very rough road and trail. All time meeting up with her. She looks very normal, as you would all say, and you would not notice any problems with her speech. You might notice she didn't have any speech. For Kathy doesn't speak. She's autistic, and this is one of the characteristics of autism. And without speech, you don't have words to develop the thought life. Now, as a parent of a handicapped child, I hope maybe I make some of you feel a little bit uncomfortable, but only with the idea that we maybe rethink our theology. Two things happened to me as a parent. One of the things is the response is that you must have committed some grave sin. Now, it wasn't always put that way, but this idea is that you've done something wrong as a parent, and there's a sin that you've done. Well, at the tender age of 24, I had not done that sin. Now, I've lived a little longer since then. I may have done some of those great sins that they talked about. But there's something wrong in that theology in saying that God has done that to you because of your terrible sins. The other alternative that happens, these are my own thoughts, is that God has given you this child to bless you, to see, you know, that you can show your love to the child. And I get just as angry about that one, too. Because I think in this case, that in both cases, you're avoiding something. You're putting the blame off on God. God has caused this. And I don't think that's not the way I read my theology. God has caused this because of something you've done as a sin, or God has put this handicapped person into your life so that you can grow. I don't think it says that. And I think when others in the community say this, what they say to me is that they want to put this problem off on God or off onto you, the other person, and not deal with it as part of the community themselves. It seems to me that, you know, God says we live in this world that is full of sin. It's an imperfect world. It's a world that everything is not right. And I think that's just what God has said. And I don't see anywhere where it says when you suddenly become a Christian or if you're baptized and born a Christian that everything is going to be perfect in the world and your problems are going to be solved and you're going to be able to cope with everything. It's like the old saying, the rain falls on the good and the bad. So we live in an imperfect world and these things happen. So where does God come in? I hope you don't tell me that God has done this to me because of my sins, because I'm going to hit you over the head with the book of Job. But I did have some pleasant experiences with the community and the church. We had some struggles. I'm going to pick on the older people a little bit, but I can begin to sympathize as I'm growing older now myself. As I grow older, the church worship service means more and more to me. And I really want to be able to focus on it. When I was younger and more fiery in my 20s, I didn't quite feel that way. And I often brought my child to the services because I felt worship was for everyone. Well, this disturbed the older people because the child was noisy and did not understand. And they couldn't appreciate the service themselves. But something has to be resolved here. The message I got first was, well, you as a parent shouldn't be doing that to us. Take your child away. But you're part of the Christian community. The child's part of the Christian community. We need you to struggle with the parent on somehow, how can you bring the faith to the child and how can you also balance off on yourself? And our Tacoma church did struggle. In fact, we even had to have a political struggle to help some people with their faith. But finally, you know, the resolution was, you know, they did remove the child from the service, but it wasn't just baby care, the child over here, but try to teach the child the faith. How do you teach a child the faith when they don't have any words? They can't talk, can't grasp that way. Well, our faith isn't all verbal. The fact that there were people willing to spend time with that child so that their parents could also have a worship experience. Parents of handicapped children need to have worship experiences. that it was important to the child to realize that there were other people who loved them enough to spend some time with them. When we had our child baptized, somehow did not see the baptismal vows as being that your parents are the only ones who are to love and care for this child. Maybe I misinterpreted the vows, but I got the feeling that the whole community of faith took that on as a vow to help bring that child up in the faith. And so that was a very pleasant experience when there were people who worked with the children and gave out affection towards those children. And autistic children are children that often part of their behavior characteristic is that they do not respond to affection and they do not give affection back. It's like turning on the cold water faucet all the time, or turning it off, maybe. And they responded to that, and it was important for us as parents to know that there were other people in the community that were willing to show their faith in caring for another person and interacting with them. The other, okay. So I guess, to me, that is a response of the community of faith struggling with the parents and not trying to blame it on God one way or another, and saying God caused this, or God's giving this to you as pity, and therefore we can wash our hands of it because your parents are the ones that God's given this blessing to struggle and bring up all by yourselves without any help from the rest of the community. And they also aren't saying, well, that's a terrible sin that's been put on you by God. They're not brushing it off on God. They're having to struggle daily with it and grow themselves. And there are no simple answers. I think I see the faith where God comes in is not whether God causes this or doesn't cause this or why he did it, but how does God help you cope with the sorrow, the disappointments in your expectations? You have a God that can deal with those sorrows. And that you can go to, you can cry at, you can rage at, then there's a God that's helping you grow in your faith. And I think that helps out in the community. Also, you can have some joys, and it's a God of joy. Now, he doesn't suddenly miraculously heal the child, but I remember my boy when he was in the second or third grade, and he took 7 months for him when he was 9 years old to teach him how to say no. Now, most children learn that fairly fast. He said, Jesus' birthday, around Christmas time. We'd been singing happy birthday to him for about a month. His birthday was a month before. And he made that connection, Jesus' birthday. And that was a very joyful time, because even though we believe in baptism, you know, and that God does the work and the child's baptized and he is a son of his, it's very nice to see even that glimmer of realization of faith and that reassurance. So it's nice if you have a God that you can also celebrate the joys of life with. But it seems to me that the scripture says we're going to have both sorrows and joys, and we need a God that's adequate on both sides.
Thank you very much. I think that you're supporting, from the parent viewpoint, something that these kids have all struggled with and found to their own satisfaction that God accepts anger and doubt and struggle as much as he accepts joy. And I think that we all have a large debt to pay these members of our community for sharing of themselves with us tonight, and hopefully educating all of us to some new problems that perhaps we weren't so well acquainted with. And that I hope that through this forum tonight, you'll be able to feel much closer and be able to share some of your thoughts and feelings with the people who have spoken tonight, and feel better about coming up to them and talking with them, and also with other members of the community of God, either perhaps in your own community, in your own churches, that kind of thing, so that you realize that a little bit better some of the problems that other people encounter. There is comp plan here in 4 minutes, so perhaps we had better call it quits for now, and then I hope you'll all get better acquainted with each one of these. Thank you.